Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation. I'm down at the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 8, 2017, or the 15th day of the 4th month of 2021. We're going to start our first service, or second service on this Sabbath day with the song entitled, His Eye is on the Sparrow. Why should I feel disturbing? Why should the shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely and long for heaven and home? Gosh, where is my portion? My constant friend is He. Once again, this is Elijah David. We're going to start with a new series today. We're going to be reading from the compilation of the book I've been working on for the last maybe 10 years. And it's entitled Eden to Eden, Judging for the Living at the 12th Parabolic Hour with the Everlasting Gospel, Matthew 24:14, Revelation 14:6. of the kingdom of the heaven and the 12th parabolic hour to the close of the probation, Daniel 2:44. Now that Daniel 2:44 is a misleading scripture. Now don't get confused on that. Daniel 2:44 is a vision about the little stone hewn out of the mountain without a hand that strikes the image on the feet and grows into a mountain and fills the whole earth. Now understand that 45 also goes with that. And also you might put 34 and 35 to go with that also. So let's do that too. Okay. So we're going to start with just the first page of my book. And we have the 24-hour parabolic time chart here of E.T. Hollis up there at the beginning. It says, observe the chart above with the 24-hour parabolic time zone with the 12-hour, both the 12-hour day, both for the 12 hours of the daylight and 12 hours of the night. Now, I know you don't have the chart in front of you, so I'll tell it to you. Alright. So if you got your pencil and paper, just write some numbers down as we go along. Write down 24-hour parabolic time chart. And then put hyphen day and night. And then put hyphen 12 hours each. All right. 12 plus 12 equals 24. I know. Only some folks don't know how to count. Well, they often say that the 11th hour is the last hour of the day. And 11 plus 11 equals 22. And yet there are 24 hours in the parabolic day. In the parable of Matthew 20, there are five groups of the laborers working in the 4 3-hour segments of the time. For the first three groups are with the working in the first 3-hour segments, each 1 through 3, 3 through 6, and 6 through 9. For the fourth group, that's the Seventh-day Adventist, 1844, Matthew 20, verse 5, called at the ninth hour, has a 2-hour segment, 9 through 11. Now, when I say 9 through 11, I'm talking about the end of the ninth hour when those 2 hours began, and that was in 1844. The ninth hour ended in 1844 with William Miller and the 2200-year prophecy. And the 11th hour ended in 2002. So you had the 10th and the 11th hour that accounts for the first 2-hour segment of the last 3-hour section. And that section is from 9 through to 12. Alright. So on the fifth group, Matthew 20, verse 6, has a 1-hour segment. That's the fifth group, and equals 12 hours in the parabolic day. John 11:9, Joshua said unto them, are there not 12 hours in the day? At the 11th hour, Matthew 20, verse 6, 2:02, hyphen, probation's closed, and I should have been more clear on that. Probation closes for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, not for the world. At the end of the 11th hour, Matthew 20, verse 6. Okay? So at the 11th hour, I should have put, at the end of the 11th parabolic hour, Matthew 20, verse 6, the fifth group of laborers are with the bringing to the close of the fourth group of laborers, the close of probation for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, And you can read Testimonies, Volume 3, page 266 and 267, for Ellen G. White's account on the clothing work for the Adventist Church. She says there's a ceiling of 144,000. Now, I guess I'm fixing to read that to you. At the 11th hour, Matthew 20, verse 6, means that the last call is made at the evening or at the end of the 11th hour day. Now, the evening is the end of each day. The evening is your last hour of every parabolic day. For there's 12 hours in every parabolic day, there are 12 hours in it. So you have 12 parabolic hours. You got 12 hours in each parabolic hour, so 12 times 12 is 144. Now keep that in mind. You want to know about this mystery number of 144,000? Well, this is the beginning, the understanding about this 12 times 12. 12 hours in a day, 12 parabolic hours in each parabolic hour, 12 times 12 is 144. Now the last call is made at the evening of the evening or the last hour of the 11th parabolic day, for the beginning of the judgment for the living, at the beginning of the last parabolic hour, 12th hour. So the 11th parabolic hour ended in 2003. The 12th parabolic hour began in 2003 for the judgment of the living. The ending of the 11th parabolic hour ends the judgment for the dead. So I've got to do some editing here. I've got to go back and add some things yet into this, but I'm telling it to you. So it says it starts at the very beginning now of this paragraph. At the ending of the 11th parabolic hour, 2003, Matthew 20, verse 6, with the fifth group of laborers, means that the last call is made at the going down of the sun of the 11th parabolic hour, meaning there's one more daylight hour in the daylight of the 12th parabolic hour, meaning the 12th hour. All your 12 hours have daylight. When the 12th hour is over, you don't have any more daylight. You have the night time. For the beginning of the judgment for the living, at the beginning of the last parabolic hour, 12th hour, 2003, for the beginning of the everlasting kingdom of the David, I might add, Daniel 2:44, and also the everlasting kingdom of the heaven, everlasting kingdom of the David and the everlasting kingdom of the heaven are synonymous terms with each other. They both mean the same thing. And you can call it the everlasting kingdom of the Son, Yahshua. Those three go together. Daniel 2:44. With the Lamb standing on the Mount Zion with 144,000, Revelation 14:1, 5, and 6, in the 12th parabolic hour, at the time that the Michael stands up for the delivering of the saints for the starting of the great and dreadful day of the Son, Yahshua, and the Father, Eliyahu. Malachi 4:5. And that Revelation 14:1-5. And believe it or not, the first verse starts with the conjunction and. And so anytime you see the conjunction and, even if it begins a sentence, that's improper. That's improper language. But they're showing you a continuation of the verse before it, or the last verse in the last chapter before it. So anyway, in Revelation 14:1-5, it says, "And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Sion, S-I-O-N, and with him 144,000 having the Father's name in their written in their foreheads." Now, why is that spelled S-I-O-N and not Z-I-O-N? Why is that done that way? Because they both mean the same thing. S-I-O-N means the literal place. The literal original place of Mount Zion is in the kingly, on the kingly palace ground in Jerusalem, Israel. Whereas Zion, Z-I-O-N, we represent Mount Zion right here. Our place is called Mount Zion at the 12th hour, right here in Liberty Hill, Texas. You get the point? Okay, verse 2. And I heard a voice from the heaven, as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne, before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000, which were redeemed from the earth. Verse 4, Revelation 14, these are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb with the Spirit of joy. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto the Father and the Son, and unto the Lamb. Verse 5, and in their mouth is found no gall, for they are without fault before the throne of the Yahweh. Alright. Five angels' messages. Revelation 14:6-20. Okay, we're going to enter into the five angels' messages. We're going to start with the first angel. Now, pay close attention, because these first three angels is laying down a type, because they're to be repeated here in the 12th parabolic hour. They were disposed of you in the 9th parabolic hour, actually. No, they were disposed, the first angel was disposed of you in the 7th parabolic hour in 1833. William Miller's called at the 6th hour, meaning at the end of the 6th hour, 1833, to take up his work in the 3 parabolic hours of the 7th, 8th, and 9th, and he had the first angel's message. Now, what was that message? Let's read all about it here. In Revelation 14:6, it says, this first angel, and I saw another angel, number one, fly in the midst of the heaven, having the everlasting gospel to preach unto them that dwell on the earth, and unto every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear the Yahweh, and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. Now, let's look at that again. Verse 7, Revelation 14. This first angel, his message is, saying with a loud voice, fear the Father, Yahweh, and give glory unto him, for the hour of his judgment is come. And worship him that made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of water. Well, how are you going to worship the Father as an Israelite? How did the Israelites of old worship the Father and the Son? They worshiped the Father through the sacrificial system of the sanctuary, and the sacrificial system represented the sanctuary program of the Son, Yahshua. So how did they worship the Father in the Old Testament? For the hour of his judgment, and worship him that made the heaven. So you can only worship him through the Son. And that would, in the Old Testament, that would be through the sacrificial system and the sanctuary and the earth. I made the heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of the waters. What does it mean, the fountains of the waters? It means all the waters of the earth, whether they're in the ocean, rivers, or whatever. Everything that's, where there's a fountains of water, that's the Father made it all. Alright, okay, now the second angel is in verse 8, Revelation 14. And there followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now, for you, a loyal Adventist, I know, I was born in the Adventist Church. I know all about the original teachings by the Adventists of the three angelic messages. And when they get to that second angel, they're just as befuddled as they were with that first angel. Because they didn't understand about what does it mean to worship the Father for the hour of His judgment has come. Well, they were taught that the judgment began with the Adventists in 1844 for the dead. You read Daniel 7, 9, and 10. And Daniel 9, 13 on through, what was it? 9:13 started with the judgment of the living with the Son. Daniel 9, 10, and 11 is the judgment of the dead. Daniel 9, 13 in that same chapter is the judgment of the living. But the Adventists don't know that. And so they don't know how to teach the hour of the judgment has come, and they don't know how to teach Babylon is fallen. What do they mean by Babylon is fallen in 1844? That's what the second angel came in 1844. Right before the Day of Atonement in 1844 took place for the Adventists, that Babylon is fallen, is fallen. Well, what represented Babylon back then? If you read the Ellen G. White enough, you'll find out that, and V.P. Hardup enough, you'll find out that the fall of Babylon was a moral fall. It wasn't a literal, physical fall. It was a moral fall. And who represented Babylon back then? The Protestant churches. You had Luther, the Lutheran church. You had John Knox with the Presbyterian church, 1543, the second reformer. You had the third reformer, John Rush, with the Methodist church, 1725. You had the fourth reformer, Alexander Campbell, of the Baptist Church, 1810, doctrine of baptism by the immersion. All these doctrines that these four reformers taught was contrary to the Catholic doctrine on the same doctrine. That's how come they came out of the Catholic Church and turned back on the Catholic Church. And this is what caused the moral fall of Babylon. So the Catholic Church represented Babylon. So it says, and another angel, verse 8 of Revelation 14, and another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Well, what the deal is William Miller in 1844, he represented the fifth reformer. He took he followed Alexander Campbell, the fourth reformer of the Baptist Church in 1810. William Miller became the fifth reformer with a prophetic message. And he's the one that brought the message of the fall of moral Babylon. Because all those Sunday-keeping churches, including William Miller, refused to accept the Seventh-day Adventist message of 1844 and Ellen G. White. They refused to advocate and say, well, how could we be so wrong what we were teaching? We've been teaching for 10 years that Yahshua is going to come back to earth in 1844. He's going to cleanse the earth by a fire and take all his waiting saints to heaven. And we don't understand where we went wrong. We don't understand where to go from here. So they didn't accept Ellen G. White and the three angels' messages, and that constituted the fall of moral Babylon. They were the reformers, but whenever they failed to accept the seventh-day Sabbath and come into the Adventist movement, as Ellen G. White come under her as the sixth reformer. See, William Miller's the fifth reformer, Ellen G. White was the sixth reformer. And her doctrine was the Sabbath. Cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, and the 2300-day prophecy of Daniel 8:14. So, they didn't, because they had a misapprehension about the conclusion of their movement. Now keep in mind that William Miller had a movement. It was the third movement from Moses coming out of Egypt. The apostles had the second movement. William Miller had the third movement coming out of Egypt. And the Seventh-day Adventist Church had the fourth movement coming out of Egypt. And Elijah David has the fifth movement coming out of the world of darkness, of false doctrine. That's who the house of David, the everlasting kingdom of heaven, here in the 12th parabolic hour in the judgment of the living, that's what you represent. So that's why we understand all these prophecies leading up to our time. So now we go to Revelation 14, verse 9. It says, number three angel. Here's the third angel. All you Adventists, y'all ought to be excited. Those that hear this message, you ought to be excited about these three angels' messages. That's what you swear by, and you swore by it all your life. That's what the Adventists have sworn by ever since they were born. Okay? And so now, you ought to be excited then. Here's the third angel, Revelation 14:9, followed them, saying with a loud voice, if any man worship the beast in his image and receive his mark in his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of Yahweh, which is poured out without the mixture into the cup of his indignation, and he shall be tormented with the fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels, and in the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascended up forever and ever, and they have no rest day nor night who worship the beast in his image, whosoever receiveth the mark of his name. Here is the patience of the saints, here are they that keep the commandments of Yahweh and the faith of Yahshua. Okay, now folks, we've come a long way. We've come from 1844 with the judgment, William Miller, 1833, the first day Adventist, with the first and second angel's message. Now keep in mind that William Miller actually brought the first and second angel's message. Ellen White only got the third. And it showed that she accepted William Miller's messages before she accepted the first two angels. Okay. And she tied him in with the third angel. So the Adventists, they inherit the three angels' messages, and they never give credit to William Miller for having brought the first two. They say, oh, we three angels' messages. We're sole owners of them. No, you're not. You inherited two of them. Okay, just like Alexander Campbell, the Baptist, in 1810, he inherited those three doctrines that were restored unto the sanctuary by Wesley and Knox and Luther. So Alexander Campbell inherited three doctrines that wasn't given him. He just inherited them to go with his doctrine of baptism. William Miller inherited all the four doctrines that went before him of Luther, Knox, Wesley, Campbell. Yeah, he didn't appreciate it. He didn't appreciate the fact that he was only given one doctrine, that was the 2300-day prophecy, and yet he understood the four doctrines that went before him, the four reformers before him. He understood all that, and he preached on those doctrines. But yet, when it came time to accepting another doctrine of the Sabbath and stepping into the next movement, he didn't recognize it. He didn't know. He thought he was the last movement. He was only the third movement then, until Matthew 20, verse 5. He was called the sixth hour. There was a ninth hour group to be called, and then there was an 11th hour group to be called. After William Miller, he didn't understand the parable of Matthew 20. That's the reason why he didn't know where he was at in the span of time. He didn't have a clue where he was at. Alright, so in Revelation 14, verse 13, says, and I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, write, blessed are the dead which die unto Yahweh from henceforth. Yea, as saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. Now, what does that mean by that? And I heard a voice from heaven saying unto me, right, blessed are the dead which die in the Yahweh from the henceforth. That was from 1844 on. Blessed are the dead that die with their name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, so they can come forth at the resurrection of the righteous dead to receive the reward when the call comes. So yea, saith the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors, and their works do follow them. So, the three angels mean that they taught the three angels messages and understood them in their time, clearly. And when they did that, they had good works. Because the fourth and fifth angel is going to be added to the three angels. And so those that follow on and understand each angel's message, then when the fourth comes on the scene, they'll accept it and understand that one too. And then when the fifth comes on the scene, they'll understand and accept it too, just like they did the first three. Only those that follow on, only those that die in the Yahshua, their works, do follow on. So for the fourth angel, in verse 15 of Revelation 14, and I looked and behold a white cloud, and upon the cloud one sat like unto the Son of Man. Uh-oh. What is this here? Folks, this is the beginning of the judgment of the living. Oh my goodness. This is in, and the beginning of the judgment of the living started in 2002. So now here we are, come all the way through the three angels' messages, judgment of the dead, and now we're back. We're starting now with the man on the white cloud, which is Yahshua himself. He's the judge. He's sitting upon his throne, and he's like unto the Son of Man. That's who it is, Yahshua, having on his head a golden crown and in his hand a sharp sickle. So sharp sickle denotes that he's come to harvest. He's got a golden crown on his head, he's got a sharp sickle in his hand, and he's sitting as a king, but he's also sitting as a judge, and he's coming now to start the judgment of the living. That's right, you have to know when the judgment of the dead ends before you can know what time period to put on this. Verse 14 of Revelation 14 and 15. So it says there, and verse 15, and another angel, and I got number 4 there, came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice unto him that sat on the cloud, thrust in thy sickle, and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. What does that mean? You have the harvest takes place in the 12th parabolic hour. But if you don't know when the 12th parabolic hour is, and where you're at in the parabolic hour, then you don't have a clue when the harvest is approaching. But this is the harvest of the first ripe grain. So the first ripe grain, the 144,000 that's in the church, is represented by the wheat grain. So the first ripe grain has to be harvested. And so this is the Son of Man coming in the clouds, Revelation 14 and 15. And he's going to reap now the harvest of the earth. Now watch this. The 144,000 are found in the Adventist Church in the United States of America. And we know in Revelation 17 that the earth in prophecy means the United States geographically. We know that from other prophecies. So it says, another verse, you could very well say, and another angel came out of the temple crying with a loud voice unto him that sat on the cloud, that was Yahshua, thrust in thy sickle, and reap, for the time is come for thee to reap, for the harvest of the 144,000 of the Adventist Church here in the United States is ripe. That's the way you could fully read that. And he that sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Okay. And he that sat on the cloud and thrust in his sickle on the earth, United States, at the Adventist headquarters, and the Adventist churches were reaped of the wheat. The 144,000, the remnant that's represented by the wheat grain, they were harvested by this man with a sickle that set upon the cloud. In verse 16 of Revelation 14. And the earth was reaped. Harvest is over. So Shemar says the closing verse of the Adventist church is the seeding of the 144,000. Read Ezekiel 9 for that closing verse. Okay. So now in Revelation 14:17, and another angel came out of the temple. What angel is that? That's your fifth angel, which is in heaven. He also having a sharp sickle. Oh, and another angel came out of the temple. So now we have two harvest angels. One of them's like under the Son of Man, number four. The fifth one is another angel came out of the temple, which is in heaven. That's where the judgment takes place, in heaven. He also having a sharp sickle. Revelation, fifth angel, verse 18. And another angel came out from the altar which had power of fire and cried with a loud voice unto him, Yahshua, the number five, that had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in thy sharp sickle, and gave the pleasure to bind the earth, for the vines of earth are fully ripe. Okay. Okay, now we're going to do that verse 15 again, Revelation 14. This is that number four angel. And another angel came out of the temple, crying with a loud voice unto him that sat on the cloud. And that him that sat on the cloud, we earlier described him in verse, previous to that, verse, I believe, 14. And it says he was like one of the Son of Man. He was like the Son of Man. So this another angel came out of the temple, and he cried unto one that sat on the cloud, which is Yahshua, with the fourth angel's message. Okay, now that number four angel means that's the fourth angel's message. Adventists don't ever teach the fourth or the fifth angel's message, so they don't know what it is. Would you teach something if you didn't know what it was? No. I don't blame them. They don't know what it is, so why teach it? Sister White gave them a little clue. They're in the Word of the Little Flock, page about 14. She said that the last two angels would be messages of prayer, and that you'll no doubt better understand them at the time of their fulfillment. She told the little Advent fellow. She said, you won't understand the fourth and fifth angel, those last two, in Revelation 14. But she did tell them that there are five angels in chapter Revelation 14 to be taught, or you're left without a rule to interpret that chapter. She said in Word Little Flock. Well, let's do this fifth angel again here in Revelation 14:18. And another angel came out from the altar, which had power over the fire, and cried with a loud cry unto him, Yahshua, that had the sharp sickle. This is your fifth angel's message. This is your second sickle. Now, what did the first sickle do? It harvested the harvest of the earth, which is your wheat harvest. Your wheat harvest is your first fruits harvest, represented by the wheat grain, and that in the Adventist Church. That's where the first harvest took place. It took place in the Adventist Church, not the world. In the United States, verse 16. He reaped a harvest of the earth with the fourth angel's message. That fourth angel's message was the sealing angel found in Revelation 7. That come with the seal of the 144,000. Revelation 7, chapter 1 through 8. Go read it. That's your fourth angel from the east. He comes from the east. It's the same one as this here fourth angel and Revelation 14, 16. You put Revelation 17, 1 through 8 right there. Or 1 through 4, that's your fourth angel. And that was harvesting. That was the first harvest of the living in the 12th parabolic hour. Your fourth angel goes to work in the 12th parabolic hour, but it was announced in the 10th parabolic hour by V.T. Hawtrip, 1930. So, but it didn't become activated until the 12th parabolic hour. And that was Lord Elijah David. He's the one that activated that angel. And also the fifth angel. Now keep in mind, the fourth angel harvests the house of Israel. The first fruits, 144,000, represented by the wheat grain. But this fifth angel, it harvests the grapes. And it harvests them in the fall. The wheat is harvested in the summer. First fruit. But the fifth angel is harvested the grapes, which are your Gentiles. They're also your brethren of the 144,000, and these Gentiles are also Israelites. But they're the second fruits harvest. They're blood kin to the first fruits harvest, the 144,000, and they're the second fruits harvest. The fifth angel harvest is the second fruits. Now you understand then now why the Adventists didn't understand what Ellen G. White said in the Wood Little Flock? And now I'm going to turn to you and read to you what she said on page 10 and 11 of the Wood Little Flock. Actually, this was written by James White, but she was the one that was a co-endorser of this article. She agreed with it 100%. Because I guarantee you, James White didn't have no inspiration to write this on his own. I can tell you that right now. He got his inspiration from his wife, and he wrote it and put it under his name. So James White didn't have no inspiration of his own. James White had no inspiration of his own at all. He wanted it, and he got mad at Yahweh for not giving it to him. He got mad at Yahweh for not making him the head of the Adventist Church and the instead of his wife, Ellen G. White. And that's the reason why he died at an early age of 60 years old in 1881. That's the reason why James White was the president of the General Conference three different times over a 17-year period, 1863 to 1881. He became the General Conference president. And he was in direct opposition to his wife when he became the General Conference President. As a matter of fact, he was one of the first ones to organize the General Conference to begin with in 1863. Just so he could oppose his wife to be the head of the church. If he could make the General Conference the most powerful agency to run the Adventist Church, and he became the president of it, then he could be over his wife. James White and Ellen G. White's relationship wasn't what it's cracked up to be. I'm just going to tell you that right now. He was very jealous and envious and very mad at Yahweh for not giving him the office of inspiration to be the head of the Adventist Church. But he didn't realize that there was a prophecy in Zechariah 6 that wouldn't allow for that. There's a prophecy in Zechariah chapter 6 that calls for a double leadership in the Adventist Church. It calls for a double span of horses to pull that fourth chariot. That fourth chariot in Zechariah 6 represented the Adventist Church. And there was a double span of horses hooked to that, and Victor Hawtrip carries inside in his little tract called The Great Paradox. There was a double leadership there. And the bay horses was one leadership. Those represented by the bay horses was one leadership. Took directly to the chariot, and the drizzled horses, nondescript, was hooked to the bay horses and the lead team of that fourth chariot. And that bay horses was represented by the general conference. And the president of the general conference represented that drizzled horse team. And Ellen G. White represented the bay horse team that was hooked to that chariot. And Zechariah 6. You'll read it for yourself. But that fourth chariot had a double span of horses, double leadership. And sure enough, when they formed the General Conference in 1863, that's when that double leadership showed up. They had another man that was a present first in 1863 at the General Conference. And then James White, the husband of Ellen G. White, became the president the second time. And then he got out and became president again, and then he got out and got back in, became president a third time over a 17-year period. And he wanted to remain president for as long as he lived. And when he found out that the general body of the general conference took deadness wouldn't allow for that, he got discouraged when his time was up the last time, and he got sick, and he pouted about it, and he was driven to his bed in 1881. His wife said, "Well, husband," said, "I can call in the elders, and they can pray for you and raise you up." He said, "No," he said, I don't want to go on." He said, "I've had enough of this world. I don't want to go on living. I'm ready to get out of here." "No, don't do that, wife. Don't call the elders. I don't want to come out of this world. I want to go ahead and die." Because he was mad at Yahweh, because he couldn't maintain the head lead team of the general of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, because he knew his wife had it. She has had the office of inspiration. And if he don't have the office of inspiration, I don't care how much he wanted to be the leader, it wasn't doing no good, and he knew it. But anyway, that's another story. So in the word little flock, page 10 and 11, it bears out these five angels' messages, endorsed Ellen G. White, and you can read it for yourself. All right, in Revelation 14, 18, is the fifth angel's message to the Gentiles here in the United States. And the world. This time, that fifth angel's message goes all over the world, whereas the fourth angel's message only went to the Adventist Church in the United States of America to harvest the wheat, which represents 144,000. Once you get that first group harvested, then you harvest the rest of the world, of the Gentiles. The brethren, these are Hebrew Israelites too. These Gentiles are Hebrew Israelites. But they're descendants of the two bondwomen that Jacob took for wives. He took two legal wives, Leah and Rachel, that represent the Adventist Church and the Davidian Adventists, Leah and Rachel. Represented the 10 tribes, SDA, and the 2 tribes, Judah, Leah and Rachel, the first 2 wives of Jacob. They were sisters. But then he took their bondmaids, 2 of them, Zillah and Ada and Zilpha. He took them, and he took them for wives. And that's where the Gentile nation descended from, the 2 bondwomen of Leah and Rachel, 2 sisters that were Hebrew Israelites, the 2 bondwomen that Jacob took for wives and had 4 sons from them, and those bondwomen were Egyptians. They weren't even Hebrew Israelites. That's where your Gentiles come from. They come from the Egyptians. So your Gentiles is a descendant from. But they had a Hebrew father, Jacob. So that makes them Hebrew, Egyptian, Israelite. Now, do you understand in the prophecy there in Isaiah 31 where it says that the last days, that Egypt, Ethiopia, and Israel is going to be a third with each other?
They're going to be what?
They're going to be a third with each other. They're going to make up the whole house, the house of Israel in Jerusalem. They're going to work together in unison. Okay, so anyway, I was kind of getting off the subject a little bit, but that's awful deep stuff. I didn't intend to get into that. But anyway, the fifth angel in Revelation 14:18, him, Yahshua, that had the sharp sickle sent, thrust in that sickle and scattered the clusters of the vine of the earth, the Gentiles, of the first in the United States, for her grapes are fully ripe. And then after you get all your Jews and Gentiles in the United States, wheat harvest, grape harvest. You harvest the wheat in the summer, you harvest the grapes in the fall. Jew and Gentile in the house of Israel, you harvest them here in the earth. Earth and prophecy of the United States. And then you give them a commission to go and get their brethren, Isaiah 66, in the islands and the nations, to Tarshish, pull in lead, to draw the bow. Isaiah 66, 16 through 20. You can go and it says, then those that escape from the first judgment, this is your first judgment in the judgment of the living. Your first judgment involves the judgment of the harvest of the wheat, the 144,000 out of the heavenly church, and the second harvest of the Gentiles in the United States, out of the Protestant churches of the United States. You don't have saints in all these trying to keep in churches around you. You're going to have them coming out of there. You're going to have them coming out of the Catholic Church. And then when that happens, guess what you can do? You can sing that song again, Babylon is fallen. And I'm going to read that to you in Revelation 18, verse 1 through 4.
Didn't Babylon already fall?
The moral fall of Babylon took place in 1844, when the Millerites refused to accept the Advent doctrine. That's when that was a sign of the second angel's message, the fall of moral Babylon. Meaning the Catholic Church has completely come to her end as far as having any powers civilly and politically to do what they did during the Dark Ages, from 1538 to 1798 at the Catholic Inquisition. So there was a 46-year period from 1798 to 1844 that the Babylon, spiritual Babylon, you know, you had a spiritual Babylon back then, when you had the Protestant churches in charge of the pure doctrine that they was trying to reform the Catholic Church with. They were called the pure Babylon. Well, you had the Lutherans, you had the Presbyterians, you had the Methodists, you had the Baptists, you had the Millerites, and you had the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Six reformers, six reformed doctrines, and if William Miller had accepted the Sabbath, that would have purified the moral Babylon that came out of the Catholic Church. That would have purified them if they accepted the Seventh-day Sabbath. But they rejected it, and so that's even why the message says they have fallen, because they rejected the Sabbath. Babylon fell. She was called spiritual up to the time she rejected the Seventh-day Sabbath. And then it says she had a moral fall, a spiritual moral fall. And she went back into the north country, it says in the prophecy of Zechariah 6. It says she went back into the north country. And it said that white team of horses that represented the Millerite movement, they followed the black team of horses that went into the north country, and in that north country, I got the chart on it, it's called Babylon. That white team of horses, the Millerites, they rejected that fourth team of horses, the Adventists, the Bay and the Drizzle horses, They rejected that, and so that third team, the white horses, followed the black horses, which represented Babylon, back into the north country, back into darkness. The white means, by Renee Miller, they had come out of darkness. The white horses, that's what I said. You have those four teams of horses. Mention that. The third team was the Miller Act, 1833 to 1844. But whenever they wouldn't accept the Sabbath, they only be white. And then they followed Babylon, Catholic Church, that had already fallen in 1798, back into the North Country. They went back to Babylon. See, they had come out of Babylon. They were out here in the wilderness. And when they rejected the message of the Sabbath out here in the wilderness, they took tail and went back into the north, into the mountains, into the north country, which is called Babylon. Oh, folks, this stuff is deep, but you know what? This has to be taught and explained. Because this goes with the three angels' messages. So next time y'all come, I'm going to get my charts down. This old big chart down. And we're going to set them up right here in front of it. And you're going to get a visual. You're going to get a visual indoctrination. And I guarantee you, when you see it visually, you'll remember it a lot easier. So anyway, we're getting first into our study, and I haven't got as far as it. But I got through the fifth angel. Let's go ahead and finish reading out that chapter, Revelation 14. So it says, verse 19, and the angel Yahshua thrust in his sickle, this is the fifth angel, into the earth, the United States, and gathered the vine, the Gentiles, in the fall of the earth, and cast it into the great winepress of the wrath of Elohim. That winepress went into operation in the judgment of the living. This is the judgment of the living, ongoing. When he gets through judging and processing the wheat, the 144,000, gets them all out and sealed. You go to Revelation 7, 1 through 8 for that sealing. And then it goes to the Gentiles, and when it gets, it throws all the bad into the winepress. And it says in verse 20, and the winepress was trodden without the city. So the winepress is outside of the Adventist church. This is where the Gentiles are being judged and processed. And blood came out of the winepress, even, this is the judgment, the sanctuary, even unto the horses' bridles by the space of 1,600 furlongs. So, the Gentiles were judged outside of the Adventist church because the Adventist church is no more. They've already been judged and brought forth 144,000, so it says in the winepress, was trodden without the city. The city is Adventist church. And blood came out of the winepress, meaning that you had bloodshed, and because it said the redeemed are saved by the blood, and those that are not saved by the blood of Yahshua in the sanctuary, you get their name put in the Lamb's Book of Life, for having been converted and accepted all the truth, then their blood is spilled out. Through that winepress. In other words, the judgment cast them out to be destroyed at a later time in their bookwork of the sanctuary. And when did that happen? On the Day of Atonement. So it says, and blood came out of the winepress on the Day of Atonement when Yahshua went in to represent all of those that was covered by his blood before the Father. That's Judgment Day. Atonement, the 10th day of the 7th month every year is Judgment Day, and the judgment of the living, and we're in that now. Even under the horse's bridle, and by the space of 1,600 furlongs. I don't understand all that, but I do understand enough to know that Jew and Gentile have to come to the sanctuary. They have to be covered by the blood of Yahshua. And anytime you see anything that has this judgment, it's always on the Day of Atonement when the final account is made, either for good or for bad. Either you have the names retained in the Lamb's Book by being covered by the blood of Yahshua, and if they're not, then they're cast out to have their blood spilled to be destroyed with the wicked. This brings the end of our service. Our contact is at the 11th hour corner. Number 11, click on our audio archive to see this message and more. We're going to close now with a song. Work for the night is coming.
Work for the night is coming. Work while the dew is sparkling. Work mid spring flowers. Work when the day grows brighter. Work in the golden song. Look for the night is coming. And man's birthday is gone. Work for the night is coming. Fill hearts with labor, rest comes sure and soon. Give every thought and measure, and sing the in store. Look for the night is coming, when that's worth no more. Look for the night is coming. Thank you.